The court is ready to hear argument in 031129 in re Kellogg Brown Group, Inc.
May it please the court, I think there are a number of reasons why the Court of Appeals decision should be reversed, even if we are worse subject to the arbitration clause in the McGregor Unidynamics contract. But I'd like to start with the threshold question of whether KBR can be bound to an arbitration clause in a contract that it's not a party to. In particular, I'd like to focus on the estoppel question. And the reason for this is I don't want to minimize the importance of the result in this particular case and whether we have to arbitrate with McGregor, but really the driving force behind KBR filing this petition with this court has more to do with the precedent that we think the Court of Appeals set and the potential impact of this case on all of KBR's other subcontracting relationships. I think it's undisputed that any time there is a motion to compel arbitration, it's a two-step inquiry. And the first issue is whether there's an agreement to arbitrate. The second is whether the claim falls within the scope of the arbitration clause. And these are two very distinct and separate issues, and they're subject to different standards. I think part of the problem with the Court of Appeals decision is they seem to have collapsed those two distinct inquiries into one, and as a result, they applied a diminished standard to the threshold question of whether KBR could be bound to the arbitration clause in this contract that it's not a party to. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court has recently said that it goes without saying that a contract cannot bind a non-party. Of course, like most black-letter rules, that's subject to exceptions. But the exceptions are narrow, and they're no different in the arbitration context than they are in any other context.
Let me just ask you preliminary. Is this moot? I mean, has the arbitration proceeded? I got some inclination of that from the briefing. And
The arbitration has proceeded. I don't think the case is moot. I think it's moot from this perspective. The relief that McGregor asked for was very specific and narrow. He said, make KBR join in this arbitration that has been proceeding for the last 5 months with Unidynamics Dynamics, which we consciously didn't join them in before because we knew that they weren't a party to our contract. And that arbitration proceeding has not concluded. So the specific relief that they asked for is new. I think the reason the case is not moved is conceivably they could go back and say, well, we want to compel arbitration under the standard the Court of Appeals established, and please compel them to go arbitrate separately in Paris. In Finland. For that reason, the case is.
But how could that happen? I mean, the arbitration was over obligations and rights under the primary contract.
That's
and
right.
If those have been determined and adjudicated.
That's right.
Then any argument that it would be on the contract would just be frivolous, wouldn't it?
I think it was frivolous in the first place.
Well,
Your Honor.
But I mean, again,
arguably more frivolous now. But I would certainly be concerned that if this case just says, you know, we vacate the Court of Appeals opinion because it's moot and send it back, the next thing we would see in the trial court is they would say, look at the standard the Court of Appeals established, your quantum merit claim, your lien claim, still somehow relate to this McGregor contract.
But is there still a dispute among the parties here?
There is a dispute. I mean, no one's paid KBR. And we still need to get paid.
But there's no dispute as to who should be paying, right?
I'm not sure that is true. I think under the result in the arbitration proceeding, if we recover on the bond that McGregor filed, I think Unidynamics is going to supposed to have to compensate McGregor for that, but I'm not sure that that resolves our claim. I don't think the whole case is moot.
How would that not resolve your claim? If McGregor is obligated to pay on the bond and you're paid.
Well, I think Unidynamics is still going to dispute that they owe us. There may be a question as to whether Unidynamics can pay. The bond is not completely sufficient to secure our liability, for example. I mean, there are other issues. I don't think the case is
important. So Unidynamics owes you more than the bond?
Yes. Total with interest and attorney's fees and all that, yes.
You were a non-signatory, but you sued for declaratory judgment. And that would have resolved who was entitled to products as between McGregor and Unidynamics.
That's right.
Look, and you said you really didn't care. It's sort of in the nature of the interpleader.
To an extent, that is correct. Not 100%. Let me talk about our declaratory judgment claim. There was a dispute between McGregor and Unidynamics. Both of them were demanding the collateral, claiming ownership of the collateral. KBR was very much caught in the middle of that dispute. We were afraid to deliver the collateral to either one, given the competing ownership claims, we could get in trouble with that. And so one of the reasons we filed the declaratory judgment action was to establish who had title to the collateral so we'd know the proper party to deliver it to. So that's one.
But that's the very issue that they had agreed to arbitrate. And there's no question they agreed to do that.
Well, they're free to arbitrate that.
Well, they're not if you drag them into a Houston courtroom and make them litigate it there. They're not free to arbitrate.
Well, they did arbitrate it, in fact.
Well, but only because of the trial judge's ruling.
Yeah,
if you had prevailed on your claim for a declaratory judgment, the parties would have, McGregor and Unidynamics would have had to litigate in Houston something that they had, there's no question about it. Unquestionably, they'd agree to arbitrate that somewhere else, Finland or Paris or somewhere.
And they can do that, but the question is KBR bound somehow to arbitrate that question?
And well, but you're forcing them to litigate.
No, I don't think so. I mean,
how do you force them to litigate when you sue them for declaratory judgment?
I think where this gets to is the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Moses Cone. A lot of times you have interrelated intertwined claims like this, and what the Supreme Court said is, you know, under the FAA, the reason we have a multiplicity of claims is because these two parties over here entered into a private agreement that they wanted to go arbitrate and resolve the dispute between themselves in another forum. And that's fine. We have to enforce that under the FAA. But that's no excuse to then force a non-signatory to come in and say, well, that non-signatory now has to come in and, as to its rights, be pulled into that arbitration.
I don't understand the argument. They were arbitrated, and nobody had bothered you at all except make noises about whether you're going to have to give up the collateral. You filed suit. Part of that suit was to insist by force of process of the court that they come and litigate the issue they were trying to arbitrate in Houston court.
Not as between themselves.
Declaratory judgment mean? Isn't it going to resolve it?
I think there's a collateral estoppel race judicata issue here of whether KBR is bound by the result in the arbitration. And yes, you could conceivably get inconsistent results, but that's just the nature of the beast.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that by suing them for declaratory judgment, you have drawn them into the courtroom when they're trying to litigate them, arbitrate them.
We have drawn them into the courtroom to litigate the issues as to KBR. We cannot force them to litigate the issues as between themselves.
How will the declaratory judgment not resolve that? That's what I'm.
I think it could. I think it could.
It could only resolve their respective duties to you and not to themselves.
I think that it could end up in the litigation because they're parties to the litigation. Resolve those claims as between McGregor and Unidynamics too. But the conversely, the arbitration could not resolve them as to KBR.
Why did you care? If why wasn't this in the nature of a true interplayer? Why did you take a position one way?
Well, that's the second reason that I was going to get to about the declaratory judgment action. The second reason for the declaratory judgment action is that we had asserted statutory and constitutional liens on this collateral. And because our contract was with Unit Dynamics, as I understand the liens, you can only get a lien against collateral that is owned by the party you have a contract with. And because our contract was with Unit Dynamics and not McGregor, we needed to establish that Unit Dynamics and not McGregor owned the collateral at the time our lien attached.
And when you establish that, all three parties will be parties to the same lawsuit. So it will be binding on everybody, and you will have litigated what those two parties agreed to arbitrate. That seems to me that's the problem.
I think that we probably would have.
Well, the question is not so much. The argument here is they shouldn't be allowed to drag us into arbitration. We didn't sign the agreement. But the argument seems to be on the other side. Well, you certainly shouldn't be allowed to drag us into litigation when we did agree.
I think the answer, Justice Sack, is they just have to be litigated in piecemeal fashion and the chips fall where they may. Because the fact that they have an arbitration agreement and agreed between themselves to arbitrate shouldn't prejudice our right to litigate. Now, I know you turn it around and say, well, gee, our right to litigate shouldn't prejudice their right to arbitrate. That's just the tension that you have, and their private agreement should not prejudice our right to litigate.
Why is that not a suit on the contract?
Because in order to be a suit based on the contract, we have to affirmatively assert rights under the McGregor contract.
Who did you say owned the property?
I think we ultimately said Unit Dynamics owned the property.
Then why did you join McGregor?
We thought we had potential other claims against McGregor, number one, in quantum merit. Second, if the property transferred after our lien attached, the lien would follow the property to McGregor.
But I guess my question is, if your lien cannot attach until ownership is determined, that ownership is determined under the prime contract. Why is your suit not then on the contract? Because it depends upon the ownership question.
I'm not sure that the ownership question is determined by the prime contract. First of all, I think the prime contract, you know, may be relevant to that question. But, for example, now the arbitration has determined the ownership. We don't need to rely on the contract to establish that. And I think that the question for whether you can bind a non-party to a contract is that party saying, look, there are provisions in this contract, clauses in this contract that run to me, that benefit me, that I'm going to enforce directly. I can sue on this contract because I'm like a party to this contract, or I'm a third-party beneficiary to this contract. This is my contract. That's what it means.
Does there have to be an all or nothing? I mean, it seems to me that if the ownership determination is bound by or wrapped up in the prime contract, and the prime parties have agreed to arbitrate that, why can't your proceedings be abated until the ownership question is determined?
And in fact, McGregor asked.
And so why wasn't that agreed to?
In the alternative.
Yes, and so why wasn't that agreed to? Yeah, that would have solved the problem.
I can't answer why that wasn't agreed to.
It would have solved the problem.
It certainly would have solved the problem. And so when we're talking about the Court of Appeals opinion and mandamus here, should we be mandamus to go arbitrate in Paris? I think the answer is no. If the question is, gee, was there this alternative relief? Should the case have been abated until the arbitration was over? I think they've got a better argument.
So you're
This is where
I don't understand your position. You're saying you're not bound by the arbitration, but yet you're saying, well, we would have abated our claims to await and then abide by the arbitration outcome?
I think that it's not so much that we would have been bound by the arbitration. I think as between McGregor and Unit Dynamics, they would have been.
But what if you didn't like the outcome? Would you say ignore the arbitration?
If we didn't like the outcome, I think you're right. I think there is the potential for us to argue that we're not bound by it and the result is wrong. And because we don't have to arbitrate, we're entitled to litigate the question, and yes, you do have the potential for.
But you do like the way that the arbitration came out, so you are willing to be bound by
it. We are. I assume my time is expired, so I'd like to address. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We're court's ready to hear arguments from the real party.
May it please the court, Mr. Galloway will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. I think, Justice O'Neill, you hit the nail on the head as far as are they not suing on the contract. You offered up a test yesterday in the Weekly case as to whether or not you're suing on the contract. Can their claim stand independent of the contract? And their claim cannot stand independent of the contract. As we've heard this morning, fundamentally, they are arguing.
Well, can their warehouseman's lien stand independent of the contract?
Their warehouseman's lien claim could potentially stand independent of the contract, but that is the tail wagging the dog. I mean, the warehouseman's lien is as to whatever small amount of money they're claiming for storage and so forth, which, by the way, they have no privity with us on that either. That was an issue in arbitration as between Unidynamics and McGregor. But their real claim here, the heart of their claim here, is a constitutional lien claim. That claim cannot stand independent of the contract because what they
and that's what I want to explore with you. Let's say I'm a candidate's materialman's guy. You know, I'm a laborer,
mm-hmm.
and I file lien on your property, and you've agreed to arbitrate in Paris. Now, do I have to go to Paris to enforce my lien?
Unless you have privity with me, you can't file a lien on my property as a materialsman under the constitutional lien. And it's not all that clear from all of our briefing.
But I could on a statutory lien.
But we're not at issue. The statutory liens are not at issue, other than the warehouseman's lien. The fundamental lien at issue here is the constitutional lien. That's where all the money is. That's what the dispute is. That's why we are in litigation. They are seeking to be paid for the work that they did on these elevator shafts. They were not paid by Unidynamics. We paid Unidynamics. They want us to pay twice. You asked the question, Justice Owen, why do they care? We asked that same question. Why do they care? Why did Unidynamics essentially join with them in fighting us in this underlying lawsuit? Aren't they the ones that have the contract with one another? Isn't Unidynamics the one that didn't pay
what
them?
What do they have to establish to prevail on their constitutional lien?
They have to establish that Unidynamics owned the property at the time that they did their work. So they have to establish title to the property. Now, you have to understand that these elevator shafts were built fundamentally with raw materials that were owned by McGregor at all times. McGregor bought the materials, supplied them to Unidynamics, in some cases shipped them directly to KVR to put together. Under the fabrication agreement, which is the agreement with the arbitration clause, there's also provisions for sort of progressive passage of title of the improvement.
So again, Eminem laborer.
Okay.
Yeah, I want a constitutional lien on your property. And all I have to show is that at the time that my lien attached, it was the subcontractors. Do I have to arbitrate in Paris to establish my constitutional lien?
Depends on how you are arguing that. They are arguing that based on the contract that contains the arbitration clause. Their argument that title passed after they did all their work is based on one thing. It's based on the title agreement, which is an amendment to the fabrication agreement, and which includes the arbitration clause.
But they're not claiming under the contract. They're just saying as between you and Unidynamics own it. They're not.
They're seeking an adjudication of that contract as to the title passage provisions. That's what they are seeking. They are seeking an adjudication of that contract, a direct benefit of that contract. They have no constitutional claim unless the title agreement is adjudicated such that title passed at a particular point in time.
But as a materialman, I've got constitutional rights.
But only against someone whose property that you have.
That's correct. But nobody asked me to waive my other constitutional rights to go into court and enforce my constitutional lien by signing an arbitration clause.
That's correct. But you did not necessarily, as a materialman, have an expectation that what you were working on belonged to your contractor, to the person that you were in privity with. You have no idea who owns this property. It may or may not be the person that you are in privity with.
So you're saying absent the lien piece, there'd be no problem here.
Well, you get to their quantum merit claim as well. Which you didn't hear much about because it essentially doesn't exist.
Not even that. I mean, if KBR were suing Unidynamics just for payment under its own contract without trying to assert a lien, they would not be subject to arbitration.
They can do whatever they want to with Unidynamics, and there's something of a red herring point raised in their briefs on that. We have never suggested that their claims against one another are subject to arbitration. Now, it's true that the Court of Appeals... Because they didn't agree to arbitrate with one another. They can do whatever they want to in court. If they are both in our arbitration, as they would have been had they not resisted, certainly they could have by agreement, and we certainly wouldn't have objected to choose to adjudicate those against one another. But we have never suggested that their claims against one another are subject to arbitration.
And even if, I suppose, KBR had sued Unidynamics, but not McGregor, and insisted that its lien was valid because of the title amendment, that still could not be removed to arbitration.
No, because who would have asked for it?
Because you're not a party and you're not bound.
I'm not a party and not bound. Now, I suppose Unidynamics could have, in that case, saying they are seeking some benefit under a contract that I have with somebody else that contains an arbitration clause.
Well, you're basically saying anybody that has a constitutional lien is seeking a benefit under a contract that's going to be bound by the arbitration clauses in those contracts.
Yeah, but that would be an unusual case. I mean, this normally you can tell who owns the property without resorting to some contract that has an arbitration clause. They are seeking that's why this hasn't come up before. Somewhat extraordinary.
Well, I thought you just said Unidynamics could require arbitration. There's no arbitration clause in Unidynamics' contract with KBR.
If KBR affirmatively ran into court and says, I've got this title agreement that says that title passed and I want to assert that right, then they're asserting a right under a contract that has an arbitration agreement in it. They're in arbitration because they affirmatively did something. They chose to assert rights that they otherwise would not have had except under the contract. Justice Wainwright asked yesterday, what's the limits of the theory of compelling arbitration? Can you just drag anybody in? Arbitration? No, you can't just drag anybody in. But if somebody's going to come into court and say, I want some rights under this contract, then you
well,
can't...
Well, let me give you my example, change a little bit from yesterday. I'm a neighbor. My two neighbors have gotten into a boundary dispute. They've decided to arbitrate any disagreements they have. They build a fence. Well, it encroaches on my property. And I say, you know, I don't care whose fence it is. I want you to get it off, and I sue both of them. Now, do I have to go arbitrate to determine which party I've got the right against?
No, because you are not that...
And they both say, not me, not me.
But see, the resolution of your dispute is not dependent upon any rights that exist, if I understand your hypothetical correctly. The resolution of your dispute is not dependent upon any issue in that contract. They happen to have chosen to arbitrate whatever disputes.
Neighbor A says, it's not my land. I'm not the owner of the land. Dismiss me as party as a matter of law. I'm not the owner. And neighbor B says, no, you are the owner. We agreed to that. And they have a dispute themselves. And I'm saying, you know, I don't know who to sue. I don't know who to get the injunction against. Do I have to go arbitrate as between those two, who to get the injunction against?
Well, I think you do if you're effectively forcing them to litigate with one another, and maybe that's the way the hypothetical breaks down. And so to Justice Heck's point, we're being dragged, we are fundamentally being forced to litigate this against each other, something that is Unidynamics and us are being effectively forced to litigate, because we also care for other reasons as between ourselves as to when this title passes. And so if in your hypothetical, Justice Owens, if they care about this boundary dispute and they cared about being bound by the outcome, and you were suing both of them, which is what they are doing, they are suing both of us on our fact pattern here, and you were effectively forcing them to resolve in court something that they had agreed to arbitrate, I think you would.
Well, let's say it's a defective product and it injured somebody, and you're saying, no, it's not ours, and Unidynamics says, no, it's McGregor's, and I'm the hurt person. Do I have to go arbitrate in Paris whose product, who owned the product that injured me?
Defective. Let me see if I understand your hypothetical correctly. There's a dispute as to who owns this defective product that you're injured by. There's some, piece of machinery sitting out on the roadway. You climb onto it and you get injured. You want to know who owns that. I guess I have a hard time understanding how that ownership would actually be in dispute against one another. But I believe if the only issue in this litigation as it is here. Their claim is essentially determined. Large, I shouldn't say only issue, but the major issue is when did title pass? If in your hypothetical, when title passed was the only critical issue, and the parties cared with one another about who owned this property, if they had a live dispute with one another about who owned this property, I think in your hypothetical, if you effectively were to drag them into court, maybe the answer is abatement is the better way to deal with this, and we could have solved a lot of things a long time ago.
Well, doesn't the law of necessary and indispensable parties, couldn't that fix it? I mean, we have the case where husband and wife own community property. Husband sues whoever he bought it from, and Texas law is that doesn't compromise the wife. The declaratory judgment action between husband and seller, buyer, whoever, doesn't compromise the wife. Looks like it would compromise the wife, but we just deem it, if it's an indispensable, necessary party, A and B can work out their suit, B and C work out their suit, neither one's binding on the non-present party, and leave it at that.
I think that may very well answer the issue. Unfortunately, we didn't have that situation here. We had both of them essentially litigating against us.
But in my hypothetical, would I have to go to Paris and arbitrate as between you two who owned the machinery before I could proceed with my personal injury lawsuit?
As to the, I'm trying to think of a principled distinction on why that would not be the case, but it seems to me that if two parties have agreed to arbitrate an issue as to who owned the property, and someone was then, in the meantime, injured by that property, and so they needed an adjudication of that issue, I think the answer would either be, yes, they have to go into arbitration, or that those parties would not be bound as against one another.
Why should we not just apply ordinary contract principles and say that if they are a third-party beneficiary, that's true, they shouldn't be able to drag them in. But if they're not a third-party beneficiary under ordinary contract principles, why does what somebody else agrees to affect them? If you had if these elevator shafts fell on someone and injured them, your same theory would apply here, that they would have to go to Paris to adjudicate that claim because ownership is a determination that has to be made. But why should that bind someone who's not by law an intended third-party beneficiary?
Well, I think the short answer is that I believe, of course, you're the Supreme Court, you can do what you want to do, but the law is otherwise by the First Merit case. It's not limited purely to third-party beneficiary. There's also an issue that we haven't fully addressed. We have in a footnote as to what law actually governs this determination of equitable estoppel issue. Is it state law? Is it federal law? The federal circuits, including the Fifth Circuit, addressing that issue, have concluded that it is a federal law issue, but it is a murky area. Is this one of the areas on an issue governed by the Federal Arbitration Act? And so the answer is that if it is indeed federal law, then you've got the equitable estoppel doctrine out there that's well settled that extends this well beyond third-party beneficiary. But I believe Texas law, as evidenced by the First Merit case, is consistent with equitable
estoppel. Well, I'm just trying to fit all this into, common everyday examples. Let's suppose we're on a job site. You've got an owner, contractor, subcontractor, the whole chain, and someone's injured on the work site, and the issue is who was controlling the premises, and the agreement between the general and the sub says that we agree to litigate all disputes between us, and I, the injured person, sue you, the general, and say you were in control, and you say, no, I wasn't in control. my sub was, but I've agreed to arbitrate with my sub all the disputes. Now, do I have to join in that arbitration?
You know, I think the answer is in the word equitable that goes with estoppel, which gives the court some discretion as to apply some common sense. We don't have here an issue of someone injured on the, you know, some workman injured on the job site that's going to have to troop over to Paris, which, by the way, Paris is something of a red herring here. The arbitration clause does not say, it's not all that easy to parse it out because the underlying contract is multiple parts, but fundamentally the arbitration clause says that it's governed by the ICC rules, which may or may not result in some forum other than Houston for this arbitration. The provision that they rely on it is in a part that's superseded by another part of this contract that relates to the ICC rules. But getting back to this equitable context, in here, as you will see from our briefs, on both briefs, there's both this direct benefits issue, which is what we've been focusing on here, but there's also this intertwined claims aspect of estoppel. We have both of those fact patterns here.
But would you agree that the Court of Appeals did blend the analysis between scope of the clause and binding effect of the clause? I mean, because they seem to say if facts are intertwined, it's arbitrable, whether you're a signatory or not. And you'd agree that's a little overbroad.
I think their wording is broad. Their result is correct. And I think you can certainly parse their wording. The Court of Appeals has a pretty seamless transition from scope to whether these parties are bound.
Counsel,
and those are two different issues. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. This summer we said that to waive constitutional rights requires a voluntary and knowing act. And we said that in the context of a pre-suit contract to waive jury trial. In this case now, in other similar cases, we're talking about whether folks who didn't sign a pre-suit knowing and voluntary or voluntary contract to waive jury rights can be forced to waive those jury rights. Reconcile your position with what we said in NRA Prudential.
Well, what they did engage in a knowing act.
Which was?
They knowingly sued us under a contract that contains an arbitration clause. We're not in privity with these guys.
So let's assume you're correct. They undertook knowingly and voluntarily an act of suing you under a contract. Is that the same as a knowing, voluntary, and intelligent waiver of a constitutional right?
If they are going to assert benefits, that's the basis of equitable estoppel. If they're going to assert benefits that they have only by virtue of this contract, they're in for a penny, they're in for a dollar. That contract has an arbitration clause. If they don't want to assert those rights, they don't have to.
I understand that. But if you take an action that's voluntary, sounds like what you're saying,
yes,
it results in waiver of a constitutional right. That's okay. We didn't mean what we said. Are you saying that the waiver has to be knowing, intelligent, and voluntary of that constitutional right, not something that may result from a lawsuit and litigation that gets to the Supreme Court later?
I'm saying, if I'm understanding Justice Wainwright, your question correctly, do they have to knowingly waive this right to, do they have to understand the full consequences of their act before it can constitute a knowing waiver? And I don't think that you have to actually know, and I'm not an expert on Texas constitutional law on what constitutes a waiver, but it makes sense to me that you should be held to the natural consequences of the voluntary choices that you make. This is not some poor homeowner out here who has come and somehow found itself subject to arbitration. This is one of the largest construction companies in the world that is well familiar with contracts that have arbitration clauses in it, and they affirmatively chose to jump the step of the party that they were in privy with, the people who owed them
again,
money.
Again, we're trying to bring it down to the lien holders across the board. Do we say lien holders that have a net worth of more than $1 million or less than $1 million? I mean, we're looking at lien holders here and trying to parse through what the law ought to be. Is a lien holder truly a beneficiary of a contract that just decides who owns the property? Or is that just sort of an
Well, I suppose it would be a closer case if you had a contract that was only that, but that is not all they are suing on. I mean, we focused on it because that's the black and white of what they are suing. But fundamentally, they are suing on this entire complex construction arrangement, this giant contract, which is subject to an arbitration clause. They're trying to get their money from us. They want us to.
What about Quantum Merowit?
Well, Quantum Merowit, under the Woodard case, the Supreme Court in 1964, which they cite, they don't have a Quantum Merowit case. If there is a contract that covers the subject matter, which there is, they've got one with Unidynamics, they don't have a Quantum Merowit case against anybody, including us. That's what the Woodard case says, or Woodward, but it's 1964 case they cite in their brief. If they've got a claim for money from us, which is their count too, it has to be under our contract, because that's the only way they can get money from us. And their contract, by the way, with Unidynamics is one of these one-pagers, which all by itself doesn't lead to anything. They, in order to understand what it is that they've agreed to do, and indeed, in their brief below, they call themselves assinees of that contract.
That would be deciding the merits in the arbitration decision.
Which
you would have to decide whether it's covered by a contract or not, which is the merits question. Deciding whether you're going to refer.
That's right. But the only route that you can go through to get there is through that contract. And as I point out, in their summary judgment brief below, they did not characterize themselves when it suited their purposes as an assignee of that contract.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Under their theory, would you have the right to compel arbitration as a non-signatory?
First of all, the standard for a non-signatory to compel arbitration is different under estoppel than the standard for a signatory to compel arbitration against a non-signatory. And I think if you look at cases like the Greedis case of this circuit, that's clear. But I think the answer is, in this case, probably not. We have no basis to compel arbitration against McGregor. We have no contract with McGregor. We have no rights under the contract between McGregor and Unidynamics. That's clear. That's why we didn't sue them for breach of contract. Our constitutional Lynn claim, Mr. Galloway said, unless there's privity, we can't file the lien. And that's right. Unless there's privity with Unidynamics, and Unidynamics owns the collateral, we have no lien claim. We have no lien claim because we have no contract with McGregor, if McGregor owns that collateral.
If the trial judge had abated, what would have happened?
If the trial judge had abated, I think the trial judge had abated, would be exactly where we are now, with an arbitration decision that establishes when title passed, and we wouldn't be here.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Exactly where we are now is in this case in this courtroom. But I thought you said at the end we wouldn't be here.
I think if the trial judge had abated, we'd have the arbitration decision. We'd walk in and we'd say, this arbitration decision establishes that Unidynamics had title, our contract's with Unidynamics, therefore our lien is valid, therefore pay us.
So and we wouldn't have this question.
I think that's exactly right. We would not have this question.
Well, which leads me back to my initial question. Isn't that what happened? I mean, haven't they done that now? And why isn't this then moot?
My view is that it should be that simple when we go back and we've got a nice, clean summary judgment case now. I doubt Mr. Galloway would agree with me. And I think that's going to have to wait remand to see if it turns out as simple as I think it ought to be at this point. So I really hesitate to say
that. But our determination of whether that ownership issue, I'm a bit confused on the mootness.
I mean, I think that this court just needs to say, the Court of Appeals is wrong. Number one, this multiplicity of suits issue doesn't have any bearing on the threshold question of should this non-party be bound to this contract. And the standard that applies for estoppel has a lot to do not with, gee, is there some contract out there that's relevant to your case so that you may rely on it as evidence, but are you directly asserting rights pursuant to that contract?
Let me ask you this. It's your position, it's been your position, I assume, throughout, that you wanted Unidynamics to be declared the owner of the property.
Correct.
Why did you sue McGregor? Why didn't you wait for McGregor to come in and say, no, it's because as between you and Unidynamics, that's binding, and well, they would have to come in and...
Well, I think, you know, you normally sue everybody who might potentially have liability to you. If we lost against Unidynamics, if that contract was valid for some reason, who knows what, then there would be a potential quantum merit claim against McGregor, which in no way derives from McGregor's contract. I mean, the measure of damages certainly doesn't turn on the amount that McGregor is going to pay under its contract or anything like that. It's, in fact, it would be completely inconsistent to file a quantum merit claim and at the same time try to say we had some contract with McGregor, because we don't. We have absolutely no rights. Our constitutional lien claim derives from the Constitution. It turns on our contract with Unidynamics, not any contract with McGregor. And it just so happens, to our misfortune, that the rights between McGregor and Unidynamics under their contract between each other happen to bear on that issue. But that's a very different thing from saying that KBR is somehow relying on that contract and trying to derive rights from that contract. I think, if anything, you could even say that this is an affirmative defense almost of them to say, no, you don't have a constitutional lien because, you know, under the contract between McGregor and Unidynamics, title transfer. So I see my time is up.
Yes.
If there are no other questions, I ask for the court decision to reverse.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take another brief recess.